loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker, and I'm joined in studio by John Kiriakou. The Department of Justice today sent a letter to Sputnik News demanding that we register with them as, quote, foreign agents, close quote. We discussed this attack on freedom of the press and freedom of speech, an attack on alternative media. We're joined in studio by Max Blumenthal. He is a journalist and best-selling author whose latest book is The 51-Day War, Ruin and Resistance in Gaza. He is also the senior editor of Alternate's Gray Zone Project and the co-host of the podcast Moderate Rebels. And we're joined from New York by Jim Cavanaugh. He is the editor of The Polemicist. .net. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Good to be on with you guys.
Thank you, Max. What was your reaction? Not a shock, but, you know, it's a shocking attack, and from my point of view, on the First Amendment.
It absolutely is. And, you know, the silence is deafening as usual from all of the organizations that are supposed to defend press freedom, and particularly the ACLU, which was totally silent about the attack on RT. Amnesty International defended Al Jazeera when it came under attack from Saudi Arabia and UAE and has said nothing. And this says a lot about who they are and how plugged in they are with, you know, the kind of liberal institutional apparatus that's cracking down on Russian state-backed media. So, you know, we have to kind of trace this campaign all the way back to the kind of, you know, the beginning of this new Cold War, and then understand the consequences, including for American reporters working in Russia. I mean, we've seen VOA and Radio Free Europe be registered as foreign agents in Russia, which was Russia's attempt to establish parity. This is what you would expect any country to do. These journalists who are backed by the U.S., who in many cases were promoting a very harshly anti-Russian line, were free to operate until this took place. They no longer are. And so it seems like the U.S. is determined to escalate at every step of the way. And, you know, throughout the show, I'll kind of give more details on how I saw this campaign originating. But it just seems like the U.S. is determined to escalate. And another escalation was the removal of credentials on Capitol Hill for RT America, the American Bureau of RT. And this was kind of carried out in a unanimous decision by the board that governs credentialing. And one of the people who made that decision was the daughter of Pat Robertson, the televangelist who blamed 9/11 on homosexuality. So, you know, some real credible people are making these decisions.
Good grief.
Yeah. It's an attack on American journalists, too, who are living in Washington, D.C., because we are Americans. I mean, we live here. We're U.S. citizens. No one's telling us what to say or what to do. Our show, this show that's been the, you know, the earliest produced show in Washington, D.C., it's been up and running since January 2 years ago. It's been 2 years. We've had, you know, 1,700 interviews. We've had probably 900 guests. Nobody's told us what to say. No one's told them what to say.
We should be very clear about that, too. Brian, you and I have a meeting every morning at 9 o'clock, and we decide what we want to say. We decide the guests that we want to have on. No one at any level tells us what to do or what to talk about ever.
Yeah, we do have a news. Just to be clear, we do have a news discussion with our editor in chief.
Sure.
Who says, "Oh, that story, that's too old. That's a day old." Or right. Let's maybe run with this one. It's a collaboration. But there's no dictation. There's nobody saying this is what Moscow wants us to say. I mean, and guess what? We would not be doing this show
no, no.
if that was the case.
I would have walked out the door.
I was forcibly removed from the set of Morning Joe once.
Oh, I want to hear that story.
You can, you know, if you're listening right now, you can watch it on YouTube. Max Blumenthal on Morning Joe is my second appearance. And I hammered Joe Scarborough and the congressional, when he was a congressional Republican, for voting for the Iraq war and draining the budget because he wanted to talk about the budget, and he was attacking me mercilessly, you know, and I brought this up and I challenged him, and I mean, Mika Brzezinski, who said nothing during the entire interview, you know, it was clear that she got the directive to shut down the interview. She said, that's enough. And a producer came on and grabbed my arm. And I mean, he didn't drag me off the set because I got up, but they removed me physically from the set with Joe screaming at me. And you know, this is the kind of treatment that anyone who's been on MSNBC, who challenges the line or offers a divergent view. I mean, David Swanson can tell you that he was immediately stopped from being on MSNBC for presenting anti-war views. Brian, you can talk about the same thing. Ed Schultz and I were talking about this the other day on RT. That's never happened to me on RT. I've never received any intervention from management at RT. And it's so obviously a freewheeling atmosphere in this studio.
Yeah, it's. I was going to say, this is not obviously, you know, this is a little legal thing supposedly directed against the Russian government. This is not about what the Russian government wants to say. This is about what American dissidents, essentially, and people who have an alternative view of America are saying. There's no place for Max Blumenthal. He was a favorite of MSNBC when he was talking about the Republicans, but suddenly now he's going to get dragged off the set. You know, there's no place for anybody who's American, who has an attitude and a notion of what America should be, to talk on mainstream media. And by some happenstance of history, RT and Sputnik have provided those platforms. This is not about stopping the Russian government or Moscow or Vladimir Putin from putting propaganda out to the United States. It's about no platforming American dissident voices for the American audience. And, you know, it's unfortunately, it's continuing, and they're going to do as much as they can with that. And that's really what it's about. It's not about the Russian government. It's about American political discourse.
And, you know, these decisions aren't made in a vacuum either. When RT was forced to register under the FARA law, the very next day, the Russians forced Voice of America and Radio Europe Radio or Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty to register. And now the Justice Department has retaliated, that's my word, by sending the letter to Sputnik. So where do we go next? Is CNN going to be forced next? And in the meantime, what about outlets like Al Jazeera or France 21 or CCTV? Who have not been asked to register? Max, how about you take a first stab at that?
Well, I mean, Jim, you wanted to say something. I mean, I can weigh in.
No, sure. I don't know what they're going to do. But it is obvious selective, so quote unquote prosecution, and it's going to continue to be selective. Nobody's maybe making a pretense anymore that there's a consistent standard being applied to every foreign news outlet. You know, it's as Max pointed out, you know, they're taking away your credentials. Well, why don't they take away the credentials of BBC or French 21? Or, you know, this is there's no standard for that. It's because they want to punish you, not because you're saying something that putting out Russian government propaganda, because you're allowing Americans to get up there and have a voice that can't be heard anywhere else. That's why they're punishing you. And it ranges from trivial punishments to substantive punishments. And what they're trying to do is discourage people who are Americans, like Max and myself, from coming on and talking because they're going to be afraid, oh, you're going to be branded as a foreign agent. And that may work for some people.
The attack will, if it expands beyond Russian state-backed media, it will target Chinese-backed media next. That's already been made clear by a congressional kind of committee that's overseen by Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, who's sort of the favorite neocon marionette. And he's actually held hearings calling for Xinhua to be registered as a foreign agent. That's the Chinese English language press service. It's very clear here what this is about. This is about narrative suppression. RT and Sputnik are not subject to the same pressures as American media. If you work in local news, and I know some people who came out of local news who are at RT who actually were ran out because they took on corporations that had influence in their media market and their channels came under pressure. I mean, pressure campaigns can come down from the pro-Israel lobby, which is one of the reasons why I'm not really welcome on cable news anymore. They can come from the Defense Department. GE owns 49% of NBC. So, and they, you know, they're heavily involved in the defense sector. So there's so many avenues that bring pressure on U.S. media to shape a very narrow perspective. That pressure doesn't exist on RT and Sputnik. And at the same time, RT and Sputnik are open to people like us who are critical of NATO expansion. We're critical of Israel. All of these sorts of things are simply forbidden in U.S. media. And that was and so the desire to limit the narrative was made very explicitly clear in the January 2017 Director of National Intelligence report. This report was introduced by the four major intelligence agencies overseen at the time by James Clapper, who's now a CNN contributor, who has said that Donald Trump is actually a Russian asset without evidence.
You have the Steele dossier.
Yeah, the Steele, right. Well, that's another aspect. So they really needed to release this because there was so much pressure coming from the Trump administration and the media for proof of Russian meddling. And the document's 23 pages long. 8 pages are high school level content analysis of RT shows that were defunct and 2 years old. And they made it in the authors of this document, who are FBI or CIA analysts whose job was to watch Abby Martin's show, said that RT was guilty of spreading, in their words, radical discontent by covering Occupy, by presenting negative coverage of fracking and police brutality. What they did not do was present any evidence that RT was acting as a kind of foreign lobbyist directed by the Kremlin, with Kremlin talking points delivered by Brian Becker and John Kiriakou. There was no evidence there whatsoever. And so that's what this is about. And Americans need to realize that. They don't, because their mainstream media is deeply threatened by RT, and so they're happy to see this happen.
I'd like to add something, too, to what Max is saying. I'm looking at this website, Prop or Not, Propaganda or Not, and they came out with this notorious or infamous list back in the summer that was run by the Washington Post as somehow legitimate. And it purports to list every news website, alternative news website, that is actually Russian propaganda. And it lists things like Truthdig, or Op-Ed News, or Consortium News, or the Drudge Report even. And there are dozens and dozens of websites on this list. Virtually anywhere you might go for alternative news, something alternative to the mainstream media. But on their website, and I think this is the most fascinating and most telling thing, in the very last paragraph of the main page on their website where they have the list, it says, "We are happy to remove any outlet whose operators understand how Putin's Russia is a brutal authoritarian kleptocracy that uses fake news as online propaganda and resolves to help us do something about it. For example, any outlet that has used a lot of Russia Today and Sputnik News content but resolves to stop doing so is going to be removed from this list." They actually come out and say that in writing on their website.
And the Washington Post was all about Prop or Not.
Jumped right on it.
Washington Post
published it.
Yeah, they published a full-page article by Craig Timberg, which is spread by a who's who of, you know, former Obama and Clinton officials. Mm-hmm. Prop or Not was sort of discredited after that. The Washington Post's first, not retraction, but editor's note appeared at the top. This has become a constant feature of Russiagate reporting at the Washington Post.
Indeed.
And so months later, a new initiative was spun out of the German Marshall Fund, featuring, who's who of the national security world, from Michael McFaul to William Kristol to Hillary Clinton's top national security aide, Jake Sullivan, on the board of directors, with a collection of kind of counter-terror cranks who were kind of trying to rustle up money through the Russiagate pseudo-scandal. And they produce a dashboard called Hamilton 68, which claims to track Kremlin disinformation in the media. And so they flagged as Kremlin disinformation outlets or vehicles, outlets including Stars and Stripes, which is, I think, the official publication of the U.S. military, ESPN, The Intercept. And, you know, it's taken as is received as gospel by mainstream media. You see article after article in Politico, Kremlin disinformation stepping up efforts to advance the NFL take a knee protests. Senator James Lankford, citing the Hamilton 68 dashboard, claimed that the Kremlin was using the NFL take a knee protests against racism to spread racial division in the U.S. And we hear nothing no protest from the Congressional Black Caucus about this kind of red baiting of the most one of the most important civil rights protests of our generation. So there you have it. I mean, it's about stopping criticism of what you could crudely refer to as the establishment.
You know, I saw something today. I didn't see the whole article. I saw a tweet about it, about the British government is putting out a mandating that Facebook produce evidence of Russian collusion. They're going to block Facebook or something. They're going to regulate Facebook. It's give me the evidence of the crime I've already asserted they're committing before, you know. And this has gone a little nuts. I mean, it's gone more than a little nuts. But just imagine if over the last year, instead of talking about this Russiagate stuff and whether Donald Trump is a Russian agent since for the last 10 years and whether RT should be registered as a foreign agent, some political force in this country that claims to be the resistance had argued for a year for single-payer health care and made the case, argued for a year against crazy wars and foreign interventions, which it's been demonstrated the public is entirely against. But instead, it's using this Russiagate and anti-Russian stuff to promote more war and to avoid all the social issues that are destroying the country. And it's astounding to me that this has gone this far, and it doesn't seem like it's going to stop.
The letter that was sent to Sputnik from the Justice Department requiring that we register as foreign agents within 30 days. It says registration under FARA would not affect the content of any broadcasts or publications that emanate from our station. Upon registration, we may continue producing and broadcasting the content of their, meaning our, choosing, provided that each broadcast is accompanied by a requisite disclosure statement. Now, this is disingenuous because if one listens to, say, 105.5 FM in the Washington, D.C. metro area, where you can hear the show, this show, every day from 4 to 6 p.m., and Radio Sputnik shows 24/7, at the end of each hour, there's already an announcement by the broadcasting agent that that this is the broadcast of the unitary blah, blah, blah network of Russia. And for more information, you can go to the site of the Justice Department. In other words, this idea that they're not trying to censor us. They're just trying to let the public know through disclosure, a required disclosure, that we are, in fact, Russian media. But that already exists. Anybody who listens to the show every hour, it's a weird little mantra that comes on, a little moniker, but that's already happening.
Yeah, it is. It's no secret.
This is so what is the point of the letter?
Well, just as a preemptive measure, I've ironed a yellow foreign agent patch onto my jacket.
I was going to say I want my card. I want my official ID card.
Just, it's coming in the mail. Be patient. But so the real idea is, I think there's many reasons to do this. One is to, as Max said and Jim said, to negate the narrative, to discredit the narrative. It's also to tell people, don't come on this show.
Right.
Because if you
get
do,
accused.
Because if you do, guess what? You can be branded as a stooge of Russia.
I was told by a producer for Jesse Ventura's show at RT that he would regularly receive 90,000 hits per YouTube video, sometimes more because of advertising on Twitter. Under pressure from the House Intelligence Committee, Twitter has been forced to or has agreed to unload RT's advertising and reject advertising from RT on almost no basis. So they've lost that traffic. In addition, because of the 60 Minutes report, which came out, I think, last Sunday. Which was a smear piece on RT, which claimed that RT America regularly hosts white supremacists and conspiracists, which is absolutely false. I mean, if anything, RT's reporting is far more anti-racist than any of the major networks. Jesse Ventura's show was unable to book, or three guests pulled out of their latest broadcast, and Robert Reich, who had been a regular guest, former Clinton Treasury Secretary, is a major liberal pundit, formally told the producer that he would no longer come on. So that's what's happening as a result of this campaign. And it's not happening because of any independent content analysis or objective analysis that's being performed by these guests. They don't know what goes on the network.
This is classic classic McCarthyism.
Yeah, yes. It's McCarthyism. This absolutely. This letter comes the day after the Democrats in the Foreign Relations Committee, Ben Cardin and others, without any participation by the Republicans, released a report about how the Kremlin, how Putin, how the Russians have interfered in American elections and in other countries' elections. And if you read the report, again, it's just put out unilaterally. You look at Politico right now, the headline is Democrats punch back on Russia. Wow.
Oh, boy. And
heroic.
Democrats, I must break you.
Democrats are increasingly tired of waiting on their colleagues in the majority to act and are taking their concerns public. So this happens. This report comes out. And the report, when you read it, it's like Sputnik all over Europe has basically decimated bourgeois democratic institutions. They were so fragile. It was just like, you know, like at the, right before the Reichstag fire in 1933. So fragile that Sputnik's coverage brought it down. And then the next day, we get this letter from the Department of Justice. Whether that's coincidental, we don't know. But certainly the targeting of Russian media as if it had such preponderant influence. And let's, again, because I agree with Max, who said in the beginning, the people you would customarily think would be the ones championing free speech and championing the right of the press, for instance, are going along with this. Let's just remind the audience, how did Donald Trump become a thing? I mean, nobody thought Donald Trump was going to become president, but because he got $2 billion in free media coverage from CBS and CNN, Americans were not listening to Loud and Clear during that time. We were an internet radio station. We weren't even on 105.5 FM, but they were getting all this free press, and all of these capitalist media corporations said, hey, it might be bad for the country, but it's good for our rating, good for our profits. They made Donald Trump a thing. That's how that happened. And everybody, if you think about it, knows that's true.
Yeah, 60 Minutes actually was the whole focus of their package was that RT somehow elected Donald Trump.
Right.
I've never met an American, and I don't know how I would. It would be like playing Where's Waldo? Find the American who was influenced by RT to support Donald Trump.
This is why, you know, you guys, I'm sorry to tell you, are not that influential. And these outlets that they're trying to keep people off of and shun and keep people away from, it's just demonstrating how afraid they are that anybody gets to talk about, you know, to put any voices on that have a strong opinion and can make a strong argument. You know, they do have an effect now in the internet age where people can go on and see the podcast, and they can. So any dissident voice that has any intelligence and any rigor, they don't want it anywhere. They don't want to put it on RT. They don't want it on a station that's, you know, doesn't have a 1% of the audience, but still they're afraid. They want to shut it up. They want to shut up even the smallest little mouse of protest.
I'm looking at the Cardin report that was released this morning. The executive summary is very entertaining. And remember, I spent 2.5 years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee staff when John Kerry was the chairman. I can tell you how these things happen. You know, you're sitting around, you don't have the same budget that the Republicans have. You need to justify your position on the committee. So you just decide to start writing something. Maybe you interview a couple of people around town. Maybe you take a foreign trip and interview somebody and you come back and you write this and then you leak it to whoever your favorite reporter happens to be. That's just the way it's done. So I'm looking at what's called the letter of transmittal. It's basically the cover page for this minority report. And it's fascinating. It says, and this is how it starts. Dear colleagues, for years, Vladimir Putin's government has engaged in a relentless assault to undermine democracy and the rule of law in Europe and the United States. Mr. Putin's Kremlin employs an asymmetric arsenal that includes military invasions, cyber attacks, disinformation, support for fringe political groups, and this is my favorite part, the weaponization of energy resources, organized crime, and corruption. It goes on, et cetera, et cetera. Following attacks like Pearl Harbor and 9/11, U.S. presidents have rallied the country and the world to address the challenges facing our nation. Yet the current president of the United States has done nothing. They're comparing this to 9/11.
And Pearl Harbor.
And Pearl Harbor.
This is a day of infamy.
And they've done that openly. Hillary Clinton compared it to 9/11, compared the Russian alleged hack of the DNC. And Ben Cardin has openly compared this to Pearl Harbor. Actually, you know, I criticized that and was attacked by Peter Beinart, the liberal pundit at The Atlantic, who said, actually, no, this was a lot like Pearl Harbor.
Oh,
and, you know,
for heaven's sake.
I mean, he actually tried to justify it in kind of a clinical, you know, the scientific way that.
Well, there's thousands of dead U.S. sailors right out in the lobby. So
right. But what about the recommendations in the Cardin report? I mean, I think that's the dead giveaway. Yeah.
Fascinating. There are 30 recommendations. And let's see. The first, it says, Mr. Trump must demonstrate presidential leadership by declaring that it is U.S. policy to deter all forms of Russian hybrid threats and begin to mobilize our government in defense. Second, the U.S. government should provide assistance in concert with allies in Europe to build democratic institutions within those European and Eurasian states most vulnerable to Russian government interference. It just goes on like that. There are lots of words, but they don't mean anything.
Well, he's calling for a defense buildup.
That's basically what it is. It's a defense buildup.
This is what the neocons want.
An ideological defense buildup that's going to match the arms defense buildup.
Right, because we don't spend enough money on the military.
And that's an important point. You know, sometimes because this is a witch hunt, people think, well, this is about guilt by association. You don't want to be tarnished. You don't want to be tarred. You don't want to come on Russian media. You don't want to become a witch yourself. But it's not just guilt by association. Beneath this witch hunt, there is policy. And that policy has content. And the content is neocon content.
Yes.
It's not just about Hillary Clinton losing the election. It's not just about rationalizing a humiliating defeat to Donald Trump. It's about where the country's going. And with this kind of messaging and this kind of orientation, it's going towards a confrontation with Russia. Now, who would think that that would be a good idea? Well, only those who might benefit from it.
During the Bush era, liberals were fervently anti-neocon. Neocon was a dirty word during the second term of the Bush era. Now liberals have joined hands with David Frum and Jennifer Rubin Crystal and the Resistance.
Max Boot.
And Max Boot appeared in Hillary Clinton commercials. So what the whole point of Russiagate for the neocons, I mean, there is a confluence of factors that have inspired Russiagate. But for the neocons, one of the purposes of it is to roll back liberal opposition or gain liberal consent for an agenda that focuses on increasing troops in the Balkans, on Russia's borders, expanding NATO, a massive defense buildup, as Ben Cardin called for in that report, preemptive sanctions on countries that refuse to abide by the NATO-US agenda. You know, we're shifting the war on terror and the war against ISIL to a war against Russia, basically building up that budget that they've already built up post 9/11 and focusing it on Eastern Europe. That's been the neocon agenda since the 70s, since Plan B under Reagan, Team B. And now liberals are cheering for it. Liberals are furious if Trump says that he won't sanction Russia further. Liberals want to fight and die to save Latvia from Russian invasion. And this is something I've never seen before in my lifetime.
All right. We're going to take a short break. That was the voice of Max Blumenthal. We're also talking to Jim Kavanaugh. You're listening to Loud and Clear. After a short, short break, we'll be right back.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Loud and Clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm Brian Becker.
And I'm John Kiriakou.
We're spending the first hour today, discussing the fact that the Department of Justice today sent a letter to Sputnik News demanding that we register with them as foreign agents within the next 30 days. We're discussing this attack on freedom of the press and freedom of speech. We're joined in studio by Max Blumenthal. He's a journalist and best-selling author whose latest book is The 51-Day War, Ruin and Resistance in Gaza. He is also the senior editor of Alternet's Gray Zone Project and the co-host of the podcast Moderate Rebels. And we're joined from New York by Jim Kavanaugh. He is the editor of thepolemicist.net. Before we went to break, Jim Kavanaugh, you were trying to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as Max pointed out, the Democrats for years posed as the enemies of the neocons. And Barack Obama went and ridiculed Mitt Romney for making Russia into an enemy. And I said, thanks for bringing back the 80s or something, some little remark. But now they're coming, they've become the neocons. They've absorbed the neocons within them. And what they want to do, the policies, as you say, are serious militaristic policies. They want to rearm Eastern Europe, and they want to put troops on the border of Eastern Europe. They're just now sending new weapons to Ukraine, to out-and-out Nazis in Ukraine, that nobody pays any attention to the fact that the United States is supporting the flagrant fascism in Ukraine. And they expect, and they, to some extent, they would like to force the Russians to accept everything, every aggression that they put in their face. And it's very, very dangerous.
While we have time, I just want to kind of offer a chronology of how I think this whole campaign developed. You know, if you could look back to the 90s, there was an atmosphere of triumphalism in the U.S. among the national security establishment. The neoconservatives at the same time seemed disturbed by the fact that a national enemy hadn't emerged. I mean, if you look back at the 90s blockbusters, you have films that are about fighting aliens because we hadn't developed. There was one film, I think Independence Day or something like that, yeah, where the U.S. actually joins with the Iraqi Air Force to fight aliens.
That's right.
Canadian Bacon?
Yeah, Canadian Bacon is a perfect parody of what the Project for a New American Century was, which is the effort to find a new enemy. They focused on the Middle East, but PNAC was this collection of neoconservatives that eventually developed into the Foreign Policy Institute, funded by Paul Singer, the major neocon billionaire and vulture capitalist. I think it was founded around 2010 or 2012. One of its fellows, Jamie Kirchick, a kind of middling neoconservative author who hangs around DC neocon circles, helped engineer Liz Wall's high profile resignation on air on RT over the annexation of Crimea. And this was really the opening shot, I think, of the new Cold War. Behind the scenes, you had these neoconservative pundits and quasi-intellectuals, Peter Pomerantsev and Michael Weiss, who had issued a paper through an obscure British think tank called the Legatus Institute, which is currently under investigation by the British Charity Commission for its role in Brexit. And it funded a paper, a white paper, by Weiss and Pomerantsev. Pomerantsev's considered an expert on Russian information warfare, arguing for the removal of journalists, pundits, and intellectuals who echo Kremlin talking points from the community of journalism, basically calling for a war on anyone who does not accept the U.S.-NATO line on Russia. Weiss and Pomerantsev promptly move into the Atlantic Council, which is funded by NATO and the Gulf states. It's a major think tank in Washington. And the Atlantic Council also becomes the forum late last year for a panel that was kind of ignored. It was early in the morning. Jamie Kirchick, formerly of the Foreign Policy Institute, had been installed into Brookings the day after the Foreign Policy Institute folds. And Kirchick is on stage railing against RT and demanding that RT be registered as a foreign agent. He claimed that RT regularly hosts Holocaust deniers, which is false, conspiracy theorists, and all the talking points you saw in the 60 Minutes broadcast. And a paper is presented there outlining the case for registering RT and Sputnik as foreign agents by a Atlantic Council fellow named Alina Polyakova. 2 days later, Alina Polyakova goes to the Brookings Institute as a fellow after introducing these papers. And that day, RT receives its first letter demanding that it register as a foreign agent. The letter was signed by a Department of Justice official, and this has never been reported before, so you guys are breaking news, named David Loffman, who is the chief of the counter-espionage section of the Justice Department and is a former CIA field operative in the 1980s, whose nomination for the Bush administration was actually pulled back after objections by Carl Levin for his lack of independence. David Loffman is what we would consider now in the Trump administration a career official. And when the crowd around Steve Bannon was leaking the names of those who they considered the traitors and the leakers to Mike Cernovich, the pro-Trump MAGA activist, one of those officials that was named by Cernovich was David Loffman. So this is a figure who's not only targeting Russian media, but also trying to tighten the vice on Trump. And so this is how I saw this whole thing developing. And there's a rich history behind it. And I don't think it's over.
Yeah. And, it goes deep. As you say, there's They have the personnel. They have the funds. They have the institutes. They have the think tanks. They can support people in putting out papers and holding conferences, and people get rewarded for it. And they get rewarded within the media. I mean, these guys who were the liars of the Iraq War are still going, and nobody's holding them to account. David Frum. I mean, you know, why are these people still around? Because it's kind of the deep state within the media, if you will. It's the deep ideological state. And it's creating now what is a classic McCarthyism, where it is creating guilt by association. And you don't want to be called a communist, and you don't want to be in bed with a communist, and you don't want to be a fellow traveler. So you're going to be careful about that. And that's what it's reproducing that at another level in a kind of, not the second time as farce, but the second time as even more dangerous tragedy.
And David Frum, I believe, was the actual author of Bush's Axis of Evil speech, preparing the country as with the neocon agenda for the invasion of Iraq. And of course, that's when North Korea, because it was part of the Axis of Evil, left the NPT, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and said, okay, well, we're going to get nuclear weapons. And we have just also, and I think this is important, what Max was pointing out. During the Bush era, the liberals and progressives said they were against the neocon agenda. Neocon and Bush, neocon and Cheney, neocon and Rumsfeld were synonyms.
Right.
And we were all in the streets, hundreds of thousands of us in the streets together, whether you were from the radical left or center left, wherever, everybody was united against the neocons. Now you have Hillary Clinton, when she becomes Secretary of State, she names as her spokesperson Victoria Nuland, who was Dick Cheney's principal senior advisor and the wife of Robert Kagan, the ideologue for the neocons.
That's right.
And so you have the neocon thing morphing and transitioning, not just the Republicans, not just Bush, but really the takeover of the dominant part of the U.S. foreign policy establishment.
Nuland was succeeded by someone who, I mean, Nuland became kind of a household name for, you know, anti-war folks, but she's been succeeded by someone who's equally as insidious, named Kurt Volker, who is currently still, while serving as the U.S. envoy to Ukraine, the executive director of the McCain Institute. Basically, you have John McCain as the envoy to Ukraine, and it all happened under, you know, Tillerson's watch, with Trump kind of fighting his culture war and not actually caring about any of the stuff that was happening. This is like a huge blow to his phony America First agenda. Volker... the McCain Institute is funded by the BMG Group, which is a lobbying firm that works for the defense industry. The BMG Group has a client, Raytheon, which was pushing for Javelin anti-tank missiles to be shipped to Ukraine, to the Ukrainian military. And Kurt Volker is going around demanding and clamoring for the shipment of those Javelin missiles. Barack Obama had refused to send them because he understood that they would do enormous damage to human life in the Donbass, where civilian casualties are happening at a 25-to-1 rate to casualties of armed personnel. And, you know, against the backdrop of Russiagate, that shipment of Javelin missiles goes through. It will not do anything to shift the balance of power there. Russia can pour more and more tanks in. All it will do is escalate the conflict. And so you're actually going to see, very likely, people die as a result of Russiagate, while Kurt Volker and the McCain Institute and his business partner, Ed Rogers, make a windfall profit.
Yeah, so there's different pieces to this. There's the underlying content of this attack, which is the neocon agenda, which is about U.S.-Russian relations, or trying to deteriorate those relations for their own purposes. Then you have the issue of the freedom of press and the freedom of speech and the right of the alternative media to function. Now, the letter to Sputnik that came today or later yesterday comes on the heels, or at the same time, coincidentally, perhaps, with Benjamin Cardin in the Senate Foreign Relations report, where the Democrats are punching back on Russia, so-called. Now, let's go to the final recommendation of the Cardin report from today, and I want to read it out loud to the audience. And this is just out. It has no input from the Republicans, and again, comes just at the same time that Sputnik is demanded by the Justice Department to be registered as a foreign agent. Here it is. Finally, U.S. and European governments should mandate that social media companies make public the sources of funding for political advertisements along the same lines as TV channels and print media. Social media companies should conduct comprehensive audits on how their platforms may have been used by the Kremlin-linked entities to influence elections occurring over the past several years, and should establish civil society advisory councils, wow, to provide input and warnings about emerging disinformation trends and government suppression. In addition, they should work with philanthropies, governments, and civil society to promote media literacy. Yeah, that's by driving the alternative media off the air and reduce the presence of disinformation on their platforms. Now, anybody who cares at all about the First Amendment can't read that, or the freedom of the press cannot read that without thinking this is a government-sponsored assault on what you get to read or hear or write. It's a government filter. It is the fundamental violation of what most Americans consider to be the most cherished part of the Constitution, which is the First Amendment.
By Cardin being a co-sponsor of the bill to punish supporters of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. This is someone who
he's been in up to his neck on that issue.
Yeah. He's owned by, he's a huge recipient of pro-Israel money. But beyond that, this is someone who doesn't care very much for the First Amendment.
Yeah, and there's a big push, as in Britain and here, to manage the social media now, which the social media networks are very powerful. They do have an influence, and they're trying to put in the guise of, civil society watchdog group or something, they're trying to put mechanisms in place that will actually force the companies to restrict what's on their platforms and to put warnings to people that, what you're about to read is fake. And this is an entire apparatus that's being formed, a network and a skein of institutions and new institutions that they hope to create, and pressures on these media companies and hearings in Congress and bringing people up before a hearing that attempt, again, to keep the discussion narrow, to keep the network, the narrative in the channel that they want it in. And that's the channel of confrontation. That's the channel of the axis of evil, Russia and China and North Korea, whatever they want to put in the axis of evil. And what you're saying about, Ukraine, and when you see these things happening, the neocons are actually kind of hoping at some level, they were hoping this, I think, in Syria, and they're hoping it in Ukraine, to force some kind of Russian military action that then can become the basis of the pretext for further American escalation, and the Donbas is a region that the Russians are not going to let just get crushed, probably. And what's the argument in Ukraine among the fascists running the government or behind the government of Ukraine and the Americans is, let us go, give us what we need to go in to crush the Donbas. And if they try to do that, it's going to create a very big danger of war.
One of the recommendations in this Cardin report is that social media sites ought to annually reveal the sources of all revenue pertaining to advertising, political advertising, just like the print media and the broadcast media do. But it says nothing about someone, you, me, the Russians, the Israelis, anybody, creating a company and calling it, the Fund for America or the Fund for American Greatness or whatever, and just masking who we are and advertising on social media anything that we want to say.
We've also seen congressional testimony from a figure I wrote about named Clint Watts, who's become one of the favorite voices of Russiagate cheerleaders. He is a fellow at a hardline pro-Cold War think tank in Philadelphia called the Foreign Policy Research Institute. He's now an NBC contributor, and he's always called in whenever there's hearings about Russian meddling. He testified twice, first in March and then I think last September or October, in support of warning labels on social media and online media. And that recalls to me the warning label campaign in the 1990s by William Bennett and C. Dolores Tucker, these kind of moral mongers who wanted to drive the rap industry into ruin. And, they did wind up with warning labels on rap albums. I think, we're not far from the day when we will see warning labels on online media, dangerous media. But one thing that I take heart in knowing is that when Facebook attempted to label fake news, human nature kicked in and people were actually curious about what was on the other side of that label. And so it actually increased traffic for dangerous items flagged as fake news. So, I don't think that this is going to work. And I have also been told, and I think, I've actually seen it through Alexa ratings, RT America and RT International, its web traffic is up massively as a result of being in the spotlight.
It's so interesting.
Refreshing.
Yeah. That's funny. When the right wing accused Obama of being a socialist when he introduced the Republican health care plan, the interest in socialism went way up. It was the most looked after word in the Merriam-Webster dictionary in 2009. So it helped us socialists. So thank you.
Sputnik should change its name to Pornhub Blockchain.
That's right.
You know, when you look at the Cardin report, not that I'm suggesting anyone actually read it, it's a long report. This is a report that the Democrats unilaterally just released at the same day that we were got a letter from the Justice Department insisting that we register as a foreign agent. I mean, there's so much about Sputnik. There's so much about RT. It's amazing. The Kremlin employs an array of media platforms and tools to craft and amplify its narratives. The Russian government's main external propaganda outlets are RT, which focuses on television news programming, and Sputnik, a radio and internet news network. And it features far-left activists and environmentalists and civil rights activists. Oh, my God, get into the bunker. I mean, get into the bunker. I mean, but it's such an obsession that if America was really sure of itself, I mean, was the U.S. ever worried about, like, TASS or Pravda or Izvestia?
Never.
Soviet media. I mean,
yeah. You
know, Soviet media used to interview me as part of the anti-war movement during the 1970s and 80s because they were always, nobody else would talk to them. The anti-war movement would. But nobody really felt that American political opinion, say, in opposition to the Vietnam War, was shaped because the Soviets also happened to have an anti-war position on Vietnam. I mean, it's so absurd.
But as you say, they must be very afraid of this stuff. I mean, the recent polling that was done that showed how much across the board people wanted an anti-war position. You know, the electorate wanted, that's one of the things they liked about Trump. He said, I'm not going to go to war with Russia. Why should we go to war with him? We're fighting on the same side. And so this is a position that's potentially very popular if it were promoted in a consistent way. But that's not what they want to do. That's not what the neocons / Democrats / Republicans, establishment Republicans, want to do. They want to maintain, for various reasons, for geopolitical military reasons and for economic reasons, for supporting the military industry, the arms industry, they want to maintain an enemy. They have to create the new axis of evil. And they're going to do that. And they're afraid that a line which is non-confrontational and which doesn't seek confrontation and seeks, let's figure out a way of working together, is going to have a public appeal.
I got to read one more line, Max, before you jump in. The Benjamin Cardin report, listen to this, guys. It's serious. As of 2017, Russia, RT attracted about 22.5 million Facebook followers, and it deftly drives traffic to its platforms with human interest stories and cat videos. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
It's clearly a threat to our democracy. That's all I can say.
I'm offended that it didn't mean, that I'm not driving traffic.
I haven't gotten far. I'm still only on page 41.
I'm going to put on my cat suit.
Let me see if I can find you in this report, Max. Deftly driving traffic with cat videos. Thought so. Every morning, John, when we get together with the editor, we think, we can't show people like cute animal videos, but maybe we can hear cute animal sounds or something because it's
radio. Do you want me to purr? Should I just purr throughout
the
podcast?
Can you purr? We'll take your picture. We'll put it on Facebook.
I like that Cardin has singled out the far left, though, and I think this is instructive for people. Liberals are supposed to know the history of McCarthyism. They're supposed to say never again, and that's clearly what's happening here. That's clearly what was behind the investigation of Jill Stein, which was absurd on its face. She was falsely accused in the steal dodgy dossier of being paid by Russia to attend the 2015 10th anniversary of RT in Moscow. She paid her own way, and she said so again and again and again. It doesn't matter. No one will report that. This is what's behind the subpoena of comedian and activist Randy Credico, who's being accused of being the go-between for WikiLeaks and the Trump campaign. I mean, how absurd can you get? And I hear that, you know, Russiagate sleuth Michael Isikoff is on the case. So, you know, there, this is about targeting the left. And I said it from the beginning that if liberals and people on the left who are going along with this narrative think it won't blow back on them, think again.
It's going to blow back. That's the thing. You know, we were talking a couple of days ago about James Risen's story in The Intercept.
Yes.
Because that marked, and I think he's right, with the Valerie Plame sort of story and the prosecution of the release of Valerie Plame's, or the names related to that incident, that it opened up a new chapter of going after the media. In other words, criminalizing people who were getting information from leaks, from sources. And at that time, the liberals were championing that because Valerie Plame and Scooter Libby, or the Bush administration, became a proxy for their opposition to Bush's war in Iraq, but they were channeling it in this reactionary direction, which only has led to a huge crackdown on journalists and whistleblowers.
Yeah, the CIA versus Bush.
Yeah.
And I don't think Valerie or Joe Wilson would actually support that narrative today. I mean, they've kind of moved left and away from where a lot of liberals are. You know, I mean, I would ask you, John, I mean, do you feel like the attitude towards whistleblowers has changed from the liberal left? Because I do when I look at the attack on Bill Binney and The Intercept, for example.
Sure. And this is exactly why I don't go on MSNBC, because Rachel Maddow only refers to me as John Kiriakou, who fashions himself a whistleblower.
You're very fashionable today.
Well, maybe if you had done 5 years instead of 2.5 years in prison, then you'd get
put your ascot on.
And that's right. And pretend I'm successful.
No, Bill Binney was just referred to by CNN as conspiracy theorist.
Right.
I mean, this wasn't a guy who was held at gunpoint by agents in the shower, who actually revealed, one of the first whistleblowers, I think, who revealed the existence of a totalitarian structure.
That's right.
He helped to invent the NSA. He was a primary person, I think, inventing the NSA program that was eventually used for surveillance. And he left after 9/11 because he felt this is not being used for what we should be using it for. This is being used against Americans in a way that I have principled objections to. This guy, and he's not a he's no leftist. He wasn't a leftist.
No, in fact, he'll tell you.
He's a conservative guy.
He's a lifelong Republican.
Yeah, but he had principles.
That's
that
right.
Were kind of the classic constitutional American principles. And he's being treated as some kind of crank on the level of Alex Jones by MSNBC and the major media.
And it was the Bush administration and the FBI under the Bush administration that raided his home, stuck a gun in his face while he was taking a shower.
And remember, he's an amputee at the same time.
Yeah, And at that time, the Democrats and the liberals would have been sympathetic to Bill Binney because of their hostility to George W. Bush. But because of the witch hunt and because of the way this is going, you have George W. Bush have an approval rating of 51% of Democrats. That's kind of an astounding thing when you think like what it was like on January 20th, 2009, when remember, for those of us who were on the inaugural parade route, not only were millions of people booing him. And then when Bush got in the helicopter to fly away, as Obama took the oath of office, you had 3 million people sticking their middle finger up in the air. And because they were so elated that he was going, and now 51% of Democrats support Bush because he criticized Trump and he criticized Russia.
Yeah, he's a nice man. You know, they always, you know, liberals would always mock conservatives for voting for him because they would want to have him over for a barbecue. Well, they've adopted that same mentality. And so you see a steady progression of the political spectrum moving right with people not even knowing. It's the story of the frog and the boiling, you know, in the boiling pot. I remember during the Bush era when Nixon was discussed as a liberal president who was intelligent and was presented such a stark contrast to Bush. And now Bush is the contrast to Trump. What's next? Oh, I know what's next. Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
And also, people made fun of Bush because he didn't talk well. He sounded silly. He sounded not, you know, smart. And so people focused on that kind of stuff, like they're focusing on Trump right now.
You got to put food on your families.
Focusing on Trump's mental acuity. And
meanwhile, in the U.S. Senate, 98-0 was the vote for new sanctions against Russia, Iran, and North Korea. And Bernie Sanders, who was one of the two votes, along with Rand Paul, he said he would have voted for it, but because it included sanctions on Russia, it would be outside of the agreement of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran nuclear deal. He, too, was for sanctions on Russia. And again, the content here is all important. If you have the leading liberals in the U.S. Senate endorsing basically a neocon agenda, if you pretend to be a neocon, as Kurt Vonnegut said, when you pretend, you know, be careful when you pretend because you are what you pretend. If you're pretending to be a neocon, guess what? You are a neocon. That's right.
And where did the neocons come from? They came from Scoop Jackson's office in the Democratic Party.
That's right.
They came from the movement of Trotskyists in the,
Socialist
Party.
It was the right wing of the Trotskyists.
Yeah. Okay. The Cliffite Trotskyists.
Yeah. Richard Perle is still a Democrat. He's still a registered Democrat. He never became a Republican, as conservative as he is.
So they're just coming home in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and also let's remember that the witch hunt, the first witch hunt, the witch hunt that we've all learned to hate and say it was a bad period in American history, that started in the late 1940s. That was Harry Truman.
That's right.
That was the Democrats.
The Democrats were in control of Congress.
And at that time, the ACLU, by the way, named names. The pro-socialist, pro-communist supporters of the ACLU were turned into the House of Un-American Activities, which is why we had something called the New York City Emergency Civil Liberties Union, that part of the ACLU that wouldn't rat out other people. I mean, that's the proud tradition of this kind of liberalism. Anyway, we're completely out of time. We've been joined in studio by Max Blumenthal. He's a journalist and best-selling author whose latest book is The 51-Day War, Ruin and Resistance in Gaza. He's the senior editor of Alternet's Gray Zone Project and the co-host of the podcast Moderate Rebels. And we've been joined from New York by Jim Cavanaugh. He's the editor of thepolemicist.net. You're listening to Loud and Clear. After a short break, we'll be right back.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.